And it's just about 24 minutes after 9 o'clock here. That's daylight savings time for those of you who overlooked it last weekend. Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist and a member of the board at Creation Moments. Their website, creationmoments.com. You want to learn more about them because there's a lot of information on that website about the biblical story of creation. And it's information of a scientific nature, which connects with Don. He is a scientist. He's spent a lot of years in pharmaceuticals. He knows what he's talking about. And one of the things he knows about is glyphosate. We've talked mm-hmm. about that in the past. It's an agricultural product that Monsanto manufactures, and it's an herbicide. It kills. And I've been watching Clarkson's Farm on Prime on TV. And he has 1,000 acres in England, and he keeps talking about when it's harvest time, they go out with a little handheld deal that measures the moisture in the crop. Mm-hmm. And they check several areas of the crop that's about to be harvested. And if the moisture's not right, they wait.
Right.
Okay, because the mill won't take it, whether it's barley or wheat, if it's not the right moisture. So if it's not quite right and they got to harvest, they spray it with glyphosate. It might be just a small part of the field. And what that does is it kills the plants and then they harvest, which results in getting glyphosate to some degree in the food chain, in the finished milled product. Now, in Europe, now this is England I'm talking about, but in Europe, glyphosate has been banned for a long time. The farmers aren't allowed to use it. That's my understanding. Here in the U.S., it is not banned. In Canada, it's used a whole lot. Why is that not good, Don?
Why is it not good? Well, it's this whole debate that's been going on for, since glyphosate was introduced Monsanto introduced it back in 76 or something. And then after they introduced it, they said, oh, wow, look, we got genetically modified products here that you can plant. And we can charge you a lot of money for, and you'll have to keep buying the seeds from us from now on out. And you can use our glyphosate, and you can use our corn and whatever other vegetable, crops that you might desire to want to keep the weeds down in. Well, it just so happens, and there's two articles really that we're probably going to be talking about. One is out of Cornwall Alliance. The other one is a recent article out of McCullough. And the Cornwall Alliance gives 11 reasons why glyphosate needs to stay on the market, and we can't just yank it, from the agricultural production. And McCullough's article points out that, hey, the basic research, toxicity research that was done on glyphosate, guess what, folks? It was done by Monsanto scientists. And so Monsanto's policing themselves, which is never a good idea. You want independent research, especially when you're putting out millions and millions of pounds of the stuff and covering the globe.
Well, Monsanto's been wildly successful for this, which leads to a clash of two opposing ideas. The Cornwall Alliance article basically says, well, it's bad, but not that bad, but it's critical to the food supply and the economy. So it's in essence an economic argument. The Mercola article says about health, it's like, well, okay, if you want to use it, but it'll kill you. It's that serious, a serious threat to human health in the food chain. So how do we resolve this now?
Well, we got to have some good science behind it. And Monsanto, when the patents were running out, they are a very shrewd company. They had actually, this is one of the companies that have swapped personnel between their company and the FDA. And so there's cross breeding there. And so they can get their products approved. when the patent was running out, they actually sold the product to Bayer. And so lo and behold, when everything started to hit the fan and lawsuits started to come out, Bayer had to bear the brunt of the lawsuits. And Monsanto got away, kind of scot-free. They said, you see, we got rid of this before these lawsuits came, were at least awarded. And I don't know, maybe David has found some information on that and how much Bayer has had to pay out.
Well, now Bayer is a German company, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The original case was settled in in 2020, and $7.25 billion. But the case has gotten new life. It's gone to the Supreme Court, and I don't understand how the court justified taking it. The lower courts have been roughly split as far as their decisions. 13 cases have been settled in the favor of the company, and 11 have been settled for the plaintiffs. The Supreme Court said that they would take it on, and the company is welcoming that. Their angle is that the EPA had at one time authorized Roundup. So that's what they're
based on the original Monsanto scripted research.
It goes back a ways, and the Biden administration had favored settling, and the Trump administration seems to be favoring the German company.
It's interesting you bring up the Supreme Court, because I'm trying to decide on what basis they can act. It's all been legal, this is not a matter of law, it's a matter of science.
One would think.
Yeah.
And, both sides can argue the case, but I guess, Bayer, it sounds like, is arguing, hey, the EPA approved it, so it's not our fault that people got sick or damaged by the product. I mean, come on, you can't blame that on us.
It's a carcinogen, correct?
It's a carcinogen, and that was the basis of the original non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Lipoma, I believe, is the was the original case brought years and years ago. They tried to bring it against Monsanto, but then it got pushed to Bayer because they acquired the product. We'll see what happens in the court with that. But clearly, there is the safety profile that was originally published and secretly camouflaged, that the Monsanto scientists weren't involved, but in fact, they were involved. And now the original journal that published that paper has retracted the paper because it's obviously a conflict of interest. And now you really can't trust that research anymore. And so new research has to be done to say, is this, product safe or is it not safe? I mean, it's clear it doesn't have acute toxicity. And that means that, okay, if you get it on your hands or if you happen to splash it, on you, you don't die immediately. Well, that's a good thing.
That's very encouraging. I'm going to die eventually anyway, so.
Yeah. Some clarification about the case as far as the Supreme Court is concerned is it's considering the idea that it would limit liability because of the EPA's involvement, and the court wouldn't decide whether or not the drug is good or bad. They would just decide how much the company had to pay.
How much liability?
How much? Yeah, how much?
Yeah, then, $7 billion. Then
are they going to be on the hook for the whole $7 billion?
It's a way of walking the middle ground again. I mean, somebody else has to come to the fore and decide this issue. Now, Mercola makes a disturbing conclusion in his article. I'll just read this short paragraph. This is because Don just mentioned that the original research article, the paper, has been retracted. Mercola says the retraction raises a deeply unsettling question that extends far beyond this single herbicide. How much of the science we've been told to trust is actually corrupted by corporate interests, and how many of the chemicals, drugs, and products declared safe are slowly poisoning us while hidden hands profit from the public's ignorance? How do you defend yourself against bad science?
Well, you know, you can't, and you've got to. I mean, everybody can't go out and do research. I mean, that's what we established the FDA to say, hey, you guys, we're charging you with the public safety. That's your number one job, is public safety. And secondary to that, if a drug, and I was in drug development, so I know this very well, the secondary to the public safety is the drug effective? You know, we don't want to just have chemicals out there. It may be safe, but it's not doing what you said it's supposed to be doing. And so a drug wouldn't get approved based on that. But when you have crossbreeding between the FDA and either the pharmaceutical company or the ag chem company in this case, then you can't trust their decision. And if you can't trust the decision of a governmental body that we all agreed was a good thing at one point in time, then public safety is not the highest priority. And maybe the highest priority is the almighty dollar. And that obviously is not a good thing. Now, a couple of other points with regard to glyphosate and the The Cornwall Alliance article does not even address this. And they do point out, well, okay, yes, in order to get uniform drying of grain seeds, we'll go ahead and spray glyphosate on them. They do not address what the concentration of glyphosate that remains on the grain when you ingest it is, and whether or not that's safe, because I got the impression, although it wasn't very clear, that they were relying on the original research, which we now know is defunct. And if indeed that is the case, then we need to know what is the actual LD50, for example. At what point in administering this particular product do 50% of your mice die? and do they die? Or do they, is it carcinogenic? And I think it's been fairly well proven that glyphosate is a carcinogen. At what concentration? I don't have that data in front of me. But the other thing about glyphosate, it is a heavy metal chelator, which is not pointed out in that article. Mercola points it out in other articles on his website on glyphosate. And so what does that do? I mean, the heavy metals, you would think, oh, I don't want to be taking heavy metals. Well, guess what? You need heavy metals. You need zinc. Zinc is very important to our metabolism. It's important to plant metabolism, and that's part of the function of glyphosate in disrupting the aromatic amino acid production in the plant. And that's how the plant dies. It shuts off that pathway by chelating heavy metals. And so if it chelates heavy metals, then it's going to do that in your intestinal tract. It's going to mess up your flora, that is the bacteria in your intestinal tract, because some bacteria won't survive under those conditions. Other bacteria will flourish, which brings me to another point, and that is what's happening to the soil when the glyphosate is sprayed on it. Now, one of the points in the article, in the Cornwall Alliance article, was that, hey, folks, we don't have to worry about this washing into lakes and streams and stuff because it sticks to the rocks. It sticks to the soil and it doesn't move. And so it stays there for a long time. Well, that should concern us if it doesn't go away. And it's a small molecule. It's not a very big molecule. So it's going to hang around for a long period of time. And what does it do to the soil? Well, it disrupts, like it would in your intestinal system, it will disrupt the biome or the microbes in the soil. So it shifts the microbes from fungus, for example. Fungus are very, very important in the soil to feed the plants.
It's a healthy thing, yeah.
The roots go down in the soil. Fungus attaches to the roots, and the fungus leaches the minerals from the soil, and it feeds the roots, and thereby feeding the plants. If you shift that away from fungus into bacteria, then your plant isn't absorbing the nutrients that it would ordinarily absorb had you had a healthy soil. So glyphosate has been shown to shift the balance in the soil, and so you don't have a healthy soil. And if you don't have a healthy soil, what do? Well, we got to put synthetic fertilizer on the soil in order to get these plants to grow. At least they look healthy. Look how green they are. Well, they look green because you're putting a lot of nitrogen on the soil, and it's not the natural nitrogen that would normally be there had you had, you know, beans growing there, you know, ahead of time before you planted the corn. And so you get a disbalance in the soil chemistry, in the soil microbiology. And all of this leads to, and he didn't address this at all, all of this leads to plants that are produced, crops that are produced that are deficient, one, in heavy metals, and deficient in nutrients that we would need as food. So the food that we're eating, while it might look good and while it might have some taste to it, does not have the nutrients that it would normally had we been doing things organically, had we been using organic fertilizer, getting healthy soil, and those type of things. So we are losing a lot by this type of agriculture. Just because you can farm thousands of acres and put thousands of acres of corn out there, or thousands of acres of rape seed, as they do in Canada, to produce canola oil, then it doesn't mean that's a good thing. You know, as we've talked about many times on this program, we've moved away from the small farm. And we've moved away because the small farmer can't afford these machines that are required to farm these days, which cost millions of dollars. And if a small farm just buys one machine, he can't make any money because he's paying, you know, the rest of his life and his farm, for the machine. So there's got to be a balance. We could have large farms, but what do we farm? Crop rotation, you know, a long, long time ago, Jesus, actually in the Bible, you know, taught this lesson where you can't keep planting the same thing over and over and over and over again on the same piece of land. You got to let the land rest on the seventh year, for example, so that the land can rebuild itself.
In other words, there is a biblical pattern established that would make great good sense to follow.
It would, but we are chasing after the almighty dollar or euro, or depending on where you are. And so we don't have time to wait. I mean, that's wasteful. You know, you're letting thousands of acres just, you know, go fallow. That doesn't sound like good agricultural practice to me. And so what we wind up doing then is all of these practices that are reducing the quality of food. And if the quality of food has been going down since the start of this whole process of mega farming, then guess what the quality of life is doing? Because you are what you eat. And if you're eating poor food, and, you know, we adulterate the food in many, many ways from the time it's, you know, it's grown and picked. But if you're adulterating your food and you're not getting the nutrition that you need, then your body's not getting the nutrition that it needs, and it can't repair itself. And so we wind up with many more cancers, many more diseases, people dying earlier because they just don't have the nutrition that their body needs. And so all of these things, you know, kind of add up to, we've got to look at the whole system. I mean, this isn't a quick fix. No, we just can't pull glyphosate off the market because we've got these mega farms that depend on it. So just as there was a transition from traditional farming to these mega farms and using glyphosate, we need to maybe back down and start saying, hey, we will reward people, and we do to a certain extent, if they don't farm this way. And let's try to, you know, bring back the smaller, you know, smaller farms and doing things more traditionally. And we know that, okay, there may be a year or two where you may not have the production that you normally would have, but farming done right produces not only as much vegetables and, you know, fruits and stuff, but of higher quality. And in the long term, it's better for everyone.
It's not like this is the first time humanity has encountered these problems, though. And I want to tell you about that in a second. But first, it sounds like we need a meeting between the Secretary of Agriculture and Health and Human Services to work something out, because I don't know that there's a source, a correction for the problem, unless it's the decimation of the human population or government coming to the rescue and making some decisions based on both science and economics that make sense. Now, there's we got to laugh because I just signed up for History Facts, and every morning I get a little article about some aspect of history. Recently, it was about five foods that used to poison us, and it goes back to the Iron Age and people eating fish out of rivers and streams where there were heavy concentrations of heavy metals, and they were poisoning themselves as sure as could be. And when during the age in the 18th century, when they thought tomatoes were poisonous, it turned out that it was routinely served on pewter plates containing lead, and lead was the poison, not the tomatoes. I mean, there have been periods throughout history when we've been eating certain foods or served it, handled it in a certain way that made people sick and killed them. But now this is a whole different scale. And I'm not really sure how you tackle the problem. Is there a chance that we could just, within the farming community, change mindset to ease this? This is probably fantasy on my part, but start breaking up the corporate farms, and putting them up for sale, or finding people willing to work them, and do a whole different basis for our agriculture, at least in this country.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Europe does a better job because, and I haven't been to Europe in a long time to see the farms, but when I took a train ride from Paris to Denmark, for example, you go along and the farmers, you know, were spreading manure on the fields. Mm-hmm. There were small farms and they were spreading manure. What farm is doing that these days other than the small farms? You know, it is a In order to have the manure, you have to have animals, and you know, you have cows or sheep or whatever you have, you got to have a source of the manure. And then in order to have the animals, you got to have pasture land for them to graze, right? And so it's a whole ecosystem that God designed, and we've walked away from because we thought it was more efficient, and perhaps it is, and it takes less human labor to farm these thousands and thousands of acres with these gigantic machines. But at the same time, I think we've lost a lot in quality of the end product, the potential toxicity from the chemicals that are being used, and we got to manufacture the fertilizer, and that's got to come, you know, from somewhere. And so it comes from petrochemical, products. And now we're putting that on our fields instead of natural fertilizer, which not only has the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, but much, much more. It has the microbes. You know, it's the microbes that you need in the soil to keep your plants healthy and to leach the minerals out of the soil that you need. So, as well as, you know, the other chemicals that are necessary for life.
There's another factor we haven't discussed here. That's agriculture in poor, food-starved areas of the world where they can't raise crops without these fertilizers and glyphosate and whatever other agricultural materials they need to get a crop. It sounds like we just need to redistribute the population back to areas where there's decent earth. I mean, this is a huge thing, and it's probably not going to happen until the Great Reset, Don. which could be close.
Yeah, we don't know exactly when that is, but even the desert areas, I mean, it's now known that if you farm correctly, that is, you plant trees, you plant vegetation. So why is it desert? Well, because it's just nothing but sand.
There's science that tells us that the Sahara Desert was once richly productive.
It was populated with vegetation.
And Yemen, which is now all desert, was irrigated from the mountains, and they grew crops. That's where the Queen of Sheba and Solomon, and there was a whole different world then. Somehow we got to get back to it.
And the first thing that one does, and this has been proven by naturalists, for example, go in and let's get sheep and goats in the area. So you bring in sheep and goats. They eat scrubs and whatever they can eat. And then pretty soon, you know, bigger bushes and trees start popping up. And now you've got, but at the same time, you're fertilizing the ground naturally. And then ultimately, you have an ecosystem where you can grow crops where crops weren't possible.
And there's a marvelous biblical example of that too, with shepherds in the fields with their flocks at night, where sheep were allowed to graze fields that had been harvested because they left deposits that prepared the field for the next harvest season, the next planting season. People in rhythm with their own land. And I just wish there was an easy answer in so-called advanced societies. If we could just get some honest science out there, surely we have the intellect to make good decisions, but money seems to corrupt everything, you know?
It does. The love of money is the root of all evil, all kinds of evil.
Yeah. Yes. Don, again, a board member at creationmoments.com, their website, creationmoments.com. Take a look there. You'll find lots of terrific information. It's a beautiful website, for one thing, but you'll find a lot of resources there that inform you and help you to teach the biblical story of creation, whether it's your individual Bible study or small groups. It's a great resource, creationmoments.com. Don, thank you so much. We're back into glyphosate, and maybe we'll solve it next week. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, no, I don't know. This isn't going away anytime soon. Billions and billions of dollars have been made and will be spent on this issue.
Don, take care. We'll see you in a week or so.
Yes, indeed.